This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side. And joining me as they do the 9 o'clock hour every single week, the MGO Blog crew, the MGO Blog Roundtable. And for the sixth time this season, we're talking about a victory. MGO Blog Roundtable after a victory. Got to savor these moments, fellas, because there have been a number of seasons where, there are a number of times we did the show. We were talking about L's. I'm sure that day will come again, but I'm glad it hasn't come yet. Joining us again, as he does every week, is Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian.
Good morning. I'm well.
Seth Fisher, and Mr. MGO Blog as well. How are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you.
And Craig Ross. Craig Ross, who is not the Craig Ross on Twitter. Not the Craig Ross on Twitter, but he is the Craig Ross with us. Craig, how are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. I've been banned on Twitter, I think, or blocked by Devin, but otherwise I'm fine.
Yeah, Devin's blocked a lot of people. Or he blocks everyone who takes a shot, right? That's his approach. But hey, let's dive right in. Michigan beats Nebraska 32-29. I think that there is an appreciation in the Michigan fan base for the significance of that victory in that environment against a team that's better than its record. I'm curious your perspective, starting with you, Brian, coming off of that game, Michigan 6-0 beating Nebraska in their house. What do you think of that victory? What do you think of the start?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good team. That's a top 25 team in the fancy stats. And I think that means something. You saw how they played against Oklahoma. They massively outplayed Michigan State and lost because of Nebraska stuff. So to go into Lincoln and to come out of there with any kind of win is something that I think this program has needed for a long time. Because, like, Wisconsin, they're not that good, right? But Nebraska is a good team. And any kind of dub, and especially in the circumstances where, you know, you get down in the second half, you have to have a comeback, you're able to, like, make some big plays. Like, I think that is a something that'll help build this team for the rest of the year.
Yeah, Nebraska lost to Illinois when they got O'Neal'd, when they outplayed Illinois. They outplayed Michigan State. I think they gave up 40 yards in the second half of that game and figured out a way to lose it. So they're a pretty good team. I don't want to discount Wisconsin. Wisconsin still has one of the best two or three run defenses in the country, and I think their front seven is excellent.
I do too.
I think Wisconsin's going to still win games this year. I'm going to go out and say they might even win that division yet. I think it's still possible. But the big thing about this game to me is winning a road game at night against a team with a pulse is really, really hard. And I bet if you did a little data search on this, you would find the road teams in these games win at about 10 to 15%. I think Michigan has only lost once, perhaps, since they started night games in Ann Arbor. And I'm not even sure it's once, but Alabama losing to Texas A&M at night at Texas A&M. These are hard games to win. And it was a good win by Michigan, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I do the charting, so it's like I can't say like what guts were and like how, you know, I just feel that stuff as a fan. But like, I mean, can we say that was like the guttiest win of the Harbaugh era so far? Like that sounded like a very loud stadium, right? It was a very harsh environment. A lot of things aren't going your way. Case example, like Cade McNamara has been pretty money on his long throws, and the only one he connects from is Sanders still is like so wide open that he can actually like dive and get to one of those. But like on a night when things are not necessarily going your way, and then like he has his first interception, everything, and like that just felt gutsy. And like I go through the charting, and like Brian's right. This is the best team we've faced so far, at least on defense. Their defensive line is stellar. Their linebackers are not the same level as Wisconsin's, and Michigan's tight ends had a day because of it. But, like, that stuff aside, that's just... It seems like a very hard thing to do, to like fall behind, to have all, you know, things not going your way, and then all of a sudden and like stay in it, come back, and win the game in the end, in Nebraska fashion, right? Like we all recognize that Nebraska kind of coughed that one up as much as Michigan took it from them. So
yeah,
Mr. Hawkins did a good job of helping causing Michigan to take that game away. Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Nino Brown. Thank you. Appreciate it. The Cade McNamara performance. I don't think it's a stretch to say it was his best performance of the year. I think, you know, to throw it 30 plus times, to notch over 200 yards pass, he was one of the reasons for their victory, in my opinion. I said that after game. Now, was it perfect? Was it close to perfect? No. He made Mikey Sainristal dive for that ball. He overthrew a few other deep shots. He threw the interception. But if you look at some of the timely throws he made, the big third down throw in the series after the interception, he made some key and clutch throws, and he piloted an offense that was able to trade with Nebraska in a game where the defense was faltering in the second half. So I'm curious what you guys make of Cade's performance or progress this season and the ongoing debate amongst Michigan fans about, hey, make the change to JJ now because the ceiling is higher with him. What would you say to that? Starting with you, Brian.
Well, I mean, I feel like the ceiling is higher, but you're 6-0, right? Like, this is not a situation where you're just looking towards next year. So nobody on an undefeated football team has ever made a quarterback change voluntarily in the history of football, right? Like, that doesn't happen. I guess actually Oklahoma just did. Never mind. but yeah, so I have my frustrations with McNamara. Like, I feel like McCarthy has shown that he is more mobile and has a bigger arm, and that's something to consider. But, you know, you go back and you look at the stats from this game, and it doesn't feel like you really did a whole lot against Nebraska, and that's because they had to settle for some field goals. But they put up more than 450 yards on this offense. So whatever limitations he's bringing to the table, they're not enough to actually significantly slow down Michigan against a pretty good team.
Yeah, I mean, my concern is, how do you take your quarterback out when they're 6-0? No one, I doubt if anyone had Michigan 6-0 at this point in the season. I know I didn't. I don't, maybe somebody out there in the Michigan fan base did, but I don't think many people saw Michigan beating Washington and Wisconsin on the road. You know, my guess is most people probably had Michigan around 4-2 right now with the hard part of the season to come. And so it, to take your quarterback out and just say, yeah, we're 6-0. Yeah, we're beating teams that we didn't think we were really going to beat. And then put someone in because your perception is the ceiling is higher. Seems like, you know, I don't know, sort of a marginal choice, a marginal decision. And the implication on the rest of your team is also, you know, hard to evaluate. And so, I think you even saw, I listened to your show with Devin is terrific on Monday, Sam, and Devin is good. But you could feel this particular strain of ambivalence going through the conversation, which is, well, do we take out this guy who's really been successful at leading our team just because maybe the other guy has a higher ceiling? I don't know. I'm skeptical that such a choice at this moment really makes any sense.
Seth?
Yeah, ironically, considering I'm the guy who's taking it from the fans on our site the most for hating on Cade McNamara, I feel like I'm like going to be like the biggest Cade defender like on this group here, because he has the highest floor of any quarterback in my memory. Like he took a sack in this game, and we were like surprised, right? We're like, how did he not get away from that? He threw an interception in this game, and I went back and looked at it, and I'm like, you know, I think he thinks Eric All is going to, you know, cut that in. Still the wrong throw. It's still a bad read, but, like, it's understandable, and that's his one interception ever. I don't think that he was the one driving the offense at all. I think when they had some major third down conversions, those were rock, paper, scissors wins. Like, Gattis had them scouted on, like, what they do in the, with those dog green blitzes, right? Where, like, they blitz only if your tight end doesn't go in. So tight end would set, and then he'd leak out there, and they got three first downs on that. I thought the tight ends were great in this game, and the running backs were really the story. When I went back and looked at the tape, Michigan was moving the ball because the run play would get them 2-3 yards, and then the running back would, like, grind out 3-7 more yards, and then when they broke free, I mean, they broke free. Like, Corum turned hit that touchdown. It was way harder than it looked. And then Haskins, like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Right? Like, that was one of the greatest. That's a play that everyone's going to remember. So I think you talk about, like, the offense and where the points were coming from. The running backs were doing a lot of it. Stuber was doing a lot of it. And the tight ends were making a lot of key blocks and a lot of that were not easy blocks to make on the linebackers. And Cade is just, he was the game manager. He didn't make super throws in this one. I thought that he just has a very high floor. And when you're a team that has a decent defense and has good players around you, maybe that's what you need. It's just like, please, quarterback, don't screw up.
Yeah. So you guys will recall, going back to the Western game and JJ getting mop-up duty in that game, I said, look, they should be playing JJ in meaningful snaps with the game still in question. He needs to be playing. You need to be growing him as a complimentary piece and building him for more than that should the need arise, right? And then they didn't do that for a few games. Then they start doing that in the Wisconsin game. To me, it's the best of both worlds because clearly there's some intangible qualities that Cade McNamara brings to the table that they value. The leadership, the moxie, the charisma. There are some things that he does that they are saying, hey, even with the limitations, you know, the deep ball accuracy that is hit or miss, right? Some of the high percentage throws that I know you said those are gimmies on those tight end delays, but I mean, we've seen him miss some of those. So even with that, there are things that he does. It's like, man, this brings us value. And at the same time, we cannot heap all the pressure on this young fella all at one time. We can grow him into it. So I think they're actually doing both things. Why would you upset the apple cart right now if you see some progress in Cade and you're growing McNamara, you're growing JJ up at the same time? Why not maintain the status quo?
Well, I mean, for me, you bring in McCarthy and it's just like, all right, now we're going to do a zone read.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Okay, so to that point, yes, do they absolutely have to expand the package, but I think that's coming. Right. I think that's coming.
Well, I mean, to me, like, Michigan is having trouble scoring touchdowns. So they're like 70th in the country to actually converting on first and goal. And so for me, like, since they're such a run-heavy team, like, that's the time I want McNamara in the game. Like, just being able to occupy a guy.
You mean McCarthy? You much,
I mean, that's that's what I mean, McCarthy. So, like, make him the red zone quarterback. And, like, is McNamara throwing in the red zone? Not really. So at that point, it doesn't really matter. You're just trying to give yourself the best chance of running the ball in back the end zone. And, like, the kind of throws that people make on the goal line are usually not interceptable. So they're going to be a fade or, you know, a little slant, something like that. So to me, that would be the way to maybe improve Michigan's offensive efficiency and blood JJ and, you know, use that ability to move in a way that is more productive than it is just kind of on a random second and 10.
Brian, you made a point a couple of weeks ago talking about, hey, man, you know, figure out what this guy, because go back to the Washington game, clearly got to a point where Gattis was like, man, this dude, I mean, I can't call a pass play that's going to work for him in this game. And they can't stop this counter. We're going to run it to death, right? Got to the second half of the Rutgers game. He couldn't complete enough to you had to run the ball. It feels like he has gotten a sense for what he needs to do to give Cade some comfort. Yeah, he's going to keep dialing up the deep shots, but the tight end delay, that bubble wheel that he called. I mean, I just felt like he's gotten into a comfort zone of what he needs to do to put him in position to make some plays and then still ride the run. The run is still their bread and butter, third and 10, You know, they call an insert zone and it goes for a first down. So it feels like he's getting into a rhythm with Cade and you know, calling the kind of plays that can kind of make it be as successful as it can be.
That's very so. One of our users named Dragonchild has been putting diaries up on our site, where he's using the UFR data to kind of show how the offense has been shifting over the last six games, and like my big complaint with Cade was that Michigan's base running play was split zone, and the problem is everything defenses do to like attack split zone specifically, Michigan could not run the counters against it. Like they were just letting those guys just own their edges. It started happening really badly against Rutgers. And so what they've done is transition away from that. They've gone to a lot of other counters that will not necessarily punish you for things that split for attacking split zone, but certainly attack in a different spot than split zone to a huge degree. And the other thing they've been doing is spreading out their personnel. So they'll come out with the same guys, right? They're going to have one tight end, they're going to have one running back and three receivers. But they can go really tight with those guys and have the receivers turn into tight ends and block, or they can go five wide. And I think that really is a much better fit for what Cade McNamara brings to the offense, because the thing that he does better than anybody, and the thing that he is really good at, spread everybody out so he can look and see who's where the coverage is, who's going to get singled up, and then he knows where he wants to go. And he reads that's the kind of quarterback he is. He reads before the snap. He's a smart guy. So they're using that more, and I thought that was effective in the offense. And then they can bring all those guys back together and turn that into a heavy set and run their counter and power stuff, and like that's what they're really good at.
I mean, you and Brian have said that the base play for Michigan this year has been split zone. And I think that's probably right. But in this game, I think they ran split zone maybe five or six times, mm-hmm. something like that. So, I mean, is that
was the point that they're using it. Yeah, they're using it a lot less, and they are, and they're not even bothering anymore with direct counters for it. They're doing like F insert, which is basically just take the tight end and have them go in the middle instead. So they were attacking the middle of the line a little bit more. Now Nebraska's line is really good, so they ate some things up just because like fast starters could not beat that nose tackle. They're just good, and that was a lot of the story of the game, was that, you know, trying to run against them is difficult because they're going to beat you on the line. So Michigan wanted to go outside of them and use the tight ends and run off tackle. But, I mean, you have Stuber, and he's going to move guys, right? When they have Zinter in, he's going to move guys. And that is, like, that's a powerful force that, like, no team can really do anything against. This offense is really good at just kind of plotting forward and doing, like, the four-yard things every single time. Spreading guys out, then get four yards. Bring everybody in, they can get 4 yards.
And let me ask a question of all you guys, and this may be stupid, but on the other hand, I think it was something that was raised in jest at MGO blog, perhaps by Seth or Brian, but maybe someone else. Why couldn't you change their quarterback's numbers so they both have the same number?
No, I mean, that was a hot take on our podcast where I said that makes sense to me.
I thought that was a brilliant idea. I mean, that's not illegal, right? Hell, you got Nebraska clapping at the line of scrimmage to simulate Michigan's snap.
Didn't they tell us we couldn't do that with the special teams when everybody was wearing number three?
Yeah, I think
we have two guys on the field
at the same time.
Right, but yeah. What I mean, no. They're both about the same size. They kind of look, you know, similar in a football uniform. Why not have them as the same number?
Then they take a step and you know it's different. One step, right. You know it's different, right?
And we don't have to stop there. I mean, you can get your name changed. We can have McNamara and McNamara, or McCarthy and McCarthy, just like.
Well, you've just put MC on the back.
Right. Yeah. And we can like fake substitute him. Like McNamara can come out and we like huddle around and then they walk out and nobody knows who it is. Joe Tiller would have done
Tiller
this.
Joe Tiller used to put like 23 guys Joe in Tiller, the huddle.
We need to honor Joe Tiller's memory and do this.
Yeah, we're just paying homage to Purdue.
We'll have a Malkovich day. I put a Malkovich on the back of everyone's jersey.
But I mean, seriously, I mean, I know it's not serious in some context, but could Michigan do this? Could they just say, nah, they got the same number?
I don't know.
How about we go with Could they expand JJ's package? Right? Could they expand his package?
That would be a good idea too.
You know, because that has to be coming. You see how they're overplaying him on those bluffs now. I mean, it is one of those deals where he is going to have some wide open opportunities to throw the football. And so I think they're going to do that. And I think you can do that and get him ready. And there may come a time, because I don't think you should wait for a loss to be ready to make a change. There could come a time where there's some serious struggles, where it's like Rutgers second half level struggle, and you need to be able to have an alternative. I think they're growing him up in a way where they're going to have that alternative should they need it. But if they don't, I mean, this is one of your team leaders. He may not be a captain, Kay McNamara, but he is a team leader. Why upset that apple cart if you don't have to? That is my point.
You know, the other thing, I'm not a great lawyer, but one thing I could do is a name change. You're right. And we could change both their names.
You're still doing this?
change one. So they just flip their names.
If we were going to do something stupid and cheap, I think this would have been the game to do it, because, oh my God, is Nebraska stupid and cheap. Like, I'm doing the defense right now, and I don't think I've charted a single play where they had enough guys in the line of scrimmage. Like, their tackles are so afraid of Aiden Hutchinson. They're like 2 yards off the line. And then, like, they do the thing where, like, they get the thumbs up from the ref, like, am I good? And then take a step back after that, and the ref is like, and they flagged it once and then finally just gave up because those guys are getting abused anyway. But I mean, I've been seeing so many things, like, it's just like, man, Scott Frost, like, if he spent as much time trying to, like, teach the game as he does trying to cheat the game, he might be a good coach.
That is a good time to take a break. I love seeing Scott Frost look constipated. I tell you that. It was great to see.
For the record, Craig, the rule is only two players on a team can have the same number, and they cannot be on the field at the same time, and they cannot play the same position. That was the last couple years.
I told you they did it because we were screwing around with number three. Remember, we tried to, like, see if we could maximize how many threes we could have on the team.
There was Gary on offense, and then both specialists.
Well, and Spate.
Both specialists and Spate, yeah.
Yeah.
No one can. I think, just to get to this question from AD, listen, man, the name of the game isn't going to be stopping them. It's going to be slowing them down. Can you slow them down? And can you play some defense with your offense? I think that's the formula against that team. There isn't better skilled talent on the team in the country, in my opinion, than Ohio State.
But Ohio State is not, I don't, in my opinion, from what I've seen so far, they're not as good on defense as they have been.
No, they're fine. No. They're fine now.
Not even close, really. And so it certainly is possible that you could bleed them some. Now, Michigan's not going to beat them unless they win turnovers. If they win a couple turnovers, if things go right for us, maybe if it's like a 2 feet of snow, you always got a chance then, but. Yeah, I mean, I feel like, in Sam's words, Michigan has a puncher's chance against Ohio State this year.
Yeah, they got to be able to keep that offense off the field some, though, because as much as I feel like, man, the front seven, the defensive line has really answered every bell anyone could have possibly had for them. On the corner, I don't think those matchups hold against Ohio State.
Not at all.
Problem. Hey, yeah, watching Vincent Gray, like, manhandle the Nebraska receiver on that penalty was just like, oh no.
Yeah. And Turner is even worse. Turner, I think, like, half the time when I see him on the field, he's committing some sort of PI.
So they need to get pressure. And they need to play offense or defense with their offense. And I think, I think there's a chance they could do that. I mean, they got to get healthy on the offensive line. That's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, they've got offensive linemen hurt, but they don't necessarily have to play their best linemen against Northwestern. So you got
right. So I was 3 weeks. I would sit Zinner for sure.
Yeah. Is there more than his hands? Like, what was causing him to go out there?
I haven't heard about more than his hand.
Okay.
But I obviously haven't inquired about more than
his hand. Yeah. I mean, the difference between him and the other guys is pretty big. I'm not saying the other guys are bad at all. It's just the other guys are fine offensive linemen, and Zinner moves people. Like, it is very noticeable when he's on the field versus not. And I think they threw him back out there again on one of the Haskins touchdowns when he was, like, he left the game and he was hurt.
Coming back here, guys. Zinner Radio, coming back.
I'm like, whoa, they moved that DT.
It was what about
on radio in 5, 4, 3.
And we have on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. MGO Blog Roundtable crew. We have Brian Cook. We have Seth Fisher. We have Craig Ross. And in the break, Ira just poured cold water on this dream that Craig Ross is having about J.J. McCarthy and Cade McNamara wearing the same number. Can't happen, right, Ira?
Yeah, so the rule that they amended a few years ago, and Seth was right, it stemmed, I think, from Michigan with the kickers and the punt or whatever with number 3, but only 2 players can wear the same number, they cannot be on the field at the same time, and they cannot play the same position.
Well, they don't play the same position. One is a quarterback, and one is a single wing tailback.
Fullback, but close. Yeah.
Fullback or something, right?
They need a fullback.
Doesn't that work? Yeah.
They do need a fullback on this team. We were talking about, like, their short yardage before and their inability to score touchdowns. And, I mean, that went back to the I was noticing it watching Nebraska as they were trying to do short stuff. They're trying to get really clever and try to run outside. And Michigan had that great play to stop them on fourth down. I think, Brian, you mentioned it in the podcast. When I went and watched it, it's even better. Like, they have their receiver coming down, coming across, and Morris knows what he's going to do. Morris knows he's going to get cracked. So he throws him off of there, occupies Martinez all the way out there until Hawkins can beat a block. And also, they've got Hawkins out there, not the cornerbacks. So, like, Michigan was ready for that. But, like, that's getting cute. That's getting fancy. And if when you got a fullback, you can just kind of, you know, bowl right forward. Well,
I don't think a lead quarterback run is getting fancy. It's just, I think Michigan picked something up on tape, because as soon as that wide receiver motions in, Morris just has eyes on him the whole time.
He sure does. Well, I think they watched the Michigan State tape. They walked into the end zone on that very play. So it's like, I mean, if you watched any film, you know, which I'm sure they did, you watch it extensively, you saw that play. He's like, okay, we get in the red zone. They might try to do this, because you're right. His head was right out there. Mm-hmm. You almost need to, if he's that cognizant of the crack coming, that is a no chance for the receiver. He's not going to block Mike Morris.
No.
It's not going to happen. And he strung it out. It was a great stop for Michigan on that play. But let's talk big picture, because that's the defense. That was my biggest question mark for Michigan's defense heading into the season. Now it goes back to corner. And, you know, who besides Dax, if you need someone to go out there and cover a guy, who else is, from a man-to-man perspective, going to be able to do that? That's my biggest question for the defense now. Who, as you look at the second half of the season, or give me your power rankings, if you will, and give me your odds of Michigan going into that Ohio State game undefeated, how you see the Big Ten shaking out?
Well, I mean, a lot of that depends on how injured Sean Clifford is, right? Because if he's out and Taquan Robinson is still in, I mean, that Penn State game doesn't look that threatening anymore.
Penn State lost their number 97, I think he is, their Mustafer, top
defense. PJ Mustafer, yeah.
Yeah, he's out for the year, I believe. That doesn't help him either.
So, but if Clifford's back, he's been playing real well, and Michigan is going to have some problems with Jahan Dotson. So, honestly, that and Michigan State both feel like coin flips. Indiana's a mess. Maryland's a mess. So I would say
Northwestern, they're not a mess.
They were born a mess this year.
I wasn't even going to bring them up because they're so bad. But so, you know, I feel like the most likely outcome is that Michigan is probably 10-1 headed to the Ohio State game. But if Clifford is out, then that flips to the most likely record is undefeated. Honestly.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the Michigan State game. I mean, it might be a game at night in East Lansing. There will be Michigan fans there. But that, you know, Michigan State's got playmakers on offense, and Thorne looks better every week. So I'm not so sure that it's I certainly am not writing off Michigan State this year. I mean, Michigan should never write them off because I find a way to bite us all the time. But so I don't know about that game either. Not sure what you guys think.
Yeah,
about
I'm focused on Michigan State before I even think about Ohio State. I could put together thoughts about Ohio State. I just don't. I want to kick that out to the fore. We've got a bye week. We've got Northwestern game will be like a nice little refresh, and let's see what we've kind of worked on. And then, I mean, the Michigan State game is going to be huge. And like that's going to be a real test for the cornerbacks. I didn't think that Michigan State was going to have a good passing game because I didn't believe in their quarterback situation. But as Craig said, it's a Thorne is getting better, and he can hit Reed and he can hit Naylor, and we can stop one of those guys. So I mean, if Michigan is going to discover something in the bye week, if they're going to look around and see that they've got something that might be ready, I really hope it's one of the young cornerbacks that we haven't seen yet, because Gray is their best cornerback by far, and Gray is very limited. And then Green has been mostly a disappointment this year. That fourth and six I thought was completely on him, and he continues to make mistakes that are like, geez, I mean, like, that was probably why he wasn't on the field before. So, I mean, cornerback, that's going to have to get fixed.
Yeah, it's – look, make no mistake, Kenneth Walker has been maybe the best transfer in the country with the way that he has run the football. I think that, you know, the Heisman talk with him or contention talk with him is legit. I do think that he is benefiting from the fact that he isn't splitting time with a Hassan Haskins or a Blake Corum, because I think both of those guys had tremendous. We can't get away from the Nebraska game really quick without talking about how good those guys were, how good they were in pass pro, the big runs they made in the second half, the yards that they made themselves. Both of those guys made yards themselves in that game. That they're just playing at a. I mean, think about, and I mean, you chart this. How many times did those guys win their one-on-one battles? One-on-one with a safety or one-on-two on a bash run. I mean, those guys are winning those battles way, way more often than we've seen in years past.
Well, the Haskins run is going to be one that you'll see long after I've passed. I mean, that's a run they're going to show over and over and over. Because, you see guys jump over defenders now and again, but you don't see him jump over defenders and then run for another 27 yards, which is, I think, how far he went. I mean, that was quite a astounding play. And so, yeah, Michigan has two great running backs. It's interesting that Haskins was a two-star and no one was interested in him. And Corum was a reasonably high-rated guy, but he wasn't considered a superstar like some of Michigan's prior running backs were. So yeah, those two have been a strength certainly of the team this year. Now one thing I will say is that Walker, while he's phenomenal, you can't say enough good about his ability. He was slowed down quite a bit by Nebraska. I mean, he didn't gain many yards in that game, and they held him to like 2 or 2.5 yards per rush. So, but Nebraska got to him early. Once he gets a little bit of room, he's tough. You can't, you got to stop him before he gets going.
So, Michigan State has faced one good defensive line so far, and that was Nebraska's.
Nebraska, yeah,
yeah. And he is going to tear you up if you are, if you can single block guys and shove them away. You're in trouble against Walker, because as soon as he gets a little bit of a head of steam, he's killing you. This is, I'm become more confident about that just because our defensive line play has been so, so much better than my wildest dreams.
Me too.
Yeah, all of us. Yeah, I mean, one thing you have to realize, Walker has played against Western Kentucky, Youngstown State, Northwestern. I mean, and those are three meatballs. And he's put up a lot of sort of, cotton candy yards.
Let's not disrespect Michigan State. Okay, he is a Heisman candidate.
I'm not disrespecting him in the slightest.
I want Michigan fans. I want Michigan fans holding Michigan State up on a pedestal right now. Let's just keep them as high as we can, and if they happen to fall, then we can all talk after.
Hey, look, I mentioned this before. We were doing a show, the countdown to kickoff, and I give Michigan State credit. I give them credit for doing well, but I mean, you got to limit it. I mean, at the end of the day, like Craig was just saying, some of these teams they've been successful against, they should beat. They should beat with the amount of talent they have, and they actually have some decent coaching. So, but I just feel like, you know, giving them too much credit is like, you know, giving their people credit for taking baths, which we know they don't do very often, right? I mean, we know that typically Michigan State people just have bad body odor. When they take a bath, we recognize that they take a bath, but don't go overboard for giving them credit for doing something they should do anyway.
This is a general statement about college football. Nobody is really that good. These are all college football teams. So, like, you know, Iowa is number two in the country right now because Penn State came in and lost their quarterback halfway through the game, and like Iowa State wasn't as good as they really are, and they got credit for beating Indiana before we all realized that Penix was broken. But like, are there, you know, any better teams than Iowa? Like, everybody's Iowa. It's just like you go and you play the games and things get close, and like Michigan winning on the road at Nebraska, it is a big deal because of that. Because like, those are games that college football teams are going to lose all the time. And I mean, we're all just college football teams. Michigan State's a college football team. They got a lot of mistakes. They got a lot of problems. We're a college football team. We've got a lot of problems. Ohio State, they're a professional team. They don't have as many problems.
But they have some. They have a defensive coordinator that is a glorified doorman, popcorn, go-getter, get us drinks. Don't do anything in the game.
I would not call Kerry Coombs the defensive coordinator anymore. I think that is a very defensive coordinator position.
He's not the defensive coordinator. They know that they gave it to somebody else. So nobody's pretending anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know what he does. Like, he's the rah-rah guy. He's in the box. Can't be the rah-rah guy.
That's what it is.
I do want to get some Michigan hockey in. So weekend one in the books, your takeaways from the blowout on day one and then the comeback effort on day two.
Well, I mean, clearly most talented team that I've seen at Michigan, and I started going in like 97, 98. So there's been a lot of talent I've seen, but just the sheer amount of it. And they were still missing a first round pick because Beecher didn't play that weekend, but there's a certain way a crowd reacts and there's like frustration in a crowd. And sometimes it's like, oh, we can't do anything. And the awe from Yost was like, oh, that was almost amazing. You got that like probably every 3 minutes, and then they scored a total of 14 goals. You know, they got some stuff to work on, obviously. Like, they're being super aggressive with their defensemen, and they are getting caught on some odd man rushes. That's fine. They'll work it out. The ability to drop guys into the zone from defense is really powerful, so they should keep doing that. But yeah, I mean, I thought that these guys would take a big step forward. They have taken a big step forward, and some of the pieces they added are really important. Like, I love Dylan Duke. Dylan Duke isn't the biggest guy in the world, and he fell in the draft, but he was the leading scorer on the U18s for a reason. He reminds me of Blake Corum because he's not big, but if you hit him, he doesn't go anywhere. So he can just park his butt in front of the net, and that's a really important skill to have when you have so many other guys on this roster who are huge skill guys but aren't going to go win in the corners. He's a guy who's going to get you the puck and then get it to his guys, and then he's going to go crash and cash in those rebounds. So he's a big piece to add. You know, Hughes he's not as flashy as his brother, but he's really talented. And then Samoskovich is another guy like Brisson who just can put it top shelf whenever he wants. And that power play, like, Lake State knew was coming on Saturday. They knew that Brisson's one-timer was the thing that they had to avoid, and they couldn't do it. Because Michigan had so much skill that even though they're specifically marking Brisson on that power play, he got it off anyway. So that's going to be Kyle Connor for that CCM line. Like, he's going to be that guy. He's going to score a ton of power play goals. So
yeah, I'm sorry.
I have some concerns about Portillo just because, you know, a couple of goals on Saturday were a little iffy to me. But I know that Dave, who covers hockey for us, was much more positive about him.
Yeah, I went through every goal on Saturday on the tape with Dave, and we ended up thinking the first goal where Portillo gave up a rebound was probably mostly on him, or though he could have had some help on that one with the puck getting cleared. The other goals were all team problems, defensive problems, and not so much on Portillo. The Saturday, I mean, Michigan beat Bowling Green in an exhibition game, just demolished them 2 weeks ago, and I felt Bowling Green was terrible. But then they went out and played really good defense in their opening two games against RPI at RPI, won 3-2 and tied 2-2. So that I found that somewhat heartening. And I don't know how good Lake State is. Friday night's game was a complete blowout. But Saturday, Michigan's up 2-0, and then they just get careless as all get out. And they give up four goals in about a 10-minute span. And they're, you know, making mistake after mistake, getting the puck out of their end. And on one goal, Michigan had everybody down below the dots. There was no one back at the blue line. The puck kicks out for a breakaway. But then the interesting thing was they really did sort of get it back together, and then they score five goals. And so they win 7-4. So it's a team that I think, you know, if they don't get overconfident like they did on Saturday night, I think they should be a great team. I agree with Brian. I've been watching hockey for a lot longer than he has. I've been watching Michigan hockey since 1966. And I think this is the best team or the most talented teams they've had, with the possible exception of the Morris and Botterill teams in the mid-90s, which were unbelievable. So, yeah, it's exciting. This weekend's games are going to be hard. Michigan has to go to Duluth. Duluth, I think, is number, what are they, three or four in the country, I think. And they are five. And then they'll play either Minnesota State or Providence. Minnesota State is number one. Providence is number 10. Michigan is sitting at number three right now. So this is a tournament or a grouping of games that could look a lot like the Final Four, Frozen Four, it's quite possible. And so you'll get a better sense about how good is this team. I think what Brian is saying about Portillo is, and I think he said it before, is that we just don't have data points on him.
Well, I mean, there's that. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the rebound on the first goal. And
yeah.
Through three games, his rebound control has been lacking. And that's something that, you know, it's a concern. And he's huge, though, and that's always going to help. And, you know, when he slides from one side to the others, there's really no room down there. So he's just kind of by virtue of being a giant guy, he's got an edge on a lot of other goalies. But you know, I think sometimes guys like that get a little overdrafted because they have a lot of potential. And we haven't seen him really, I think, excel so far. So,
and maybe that is part of, because I ask you, you know, you guys as my hockey liaisons, my hockey guys, my go-to guys, say, well, if Michigan is this talented, the most talented Michigan team we've ever seen, how is any, and all these first round draft picks, that being unprecedented, right? How is anyone ranked ahead of them? Maybe Portillo, it being one of the reasons. The other piece, and Ira brought this up when he first mentioned it, he said, you got a lot of other teams that have more experience, veterans that are key players. But then I look at this game, and I'm going to ask Mel about this. I mean, think about who keyed the comeback. They're seniors. They're third line. It seems like to me they have all the experience, Brian.
It was Luke Morgan with the saucer pass to Jimmy Lambert. And I was like, all right. I guess they've been hanging out with Kent Johnson. But no, so they get those two guys back on COVID shirts, so they have 6 years. They have Van Wy, who's a senior on their fourth line. They have Moyle, who's been around forever.
Pasta.
They have Blankenberg on their top defense pairing. This is not a team that is exclusively relying on young guys. They have some guys who are 24, 25. And, you know, I don't think it's the fact that Michigan's too young is going to be a problem, because, you know, that those first two lines are not going to be negative lines, right? They're going to be plus 20 lines. And so, okay, where do you get the grit from? Well, they got plenty of that. And they have a lot of experience on the back line too, because like their third pairing, you know, it's probably going to be Ethan Edwards, who's got some sauce, let me tell you. But also it's going to be, you know, Person, who's a junior. So, and he was a 20-year-old freshman. So they have a lot of experience. And even the guys who are first-round draft picks, you know, three of those guys already spent a season in college. So sometimes you have sort of an adjustment year where a guy comes in and you're like, I don't really see it here. And then they take off in the last second half of the year. Like Pacioretty was like that. But these guys have already been around the block. They know what to expect in Big Ten play. And, you know, Kent Johnson's already a point-per-game player. So where is he going to go this year? You know, I feel like it's a little overblown, the youth.
Go ahead, Seth.
No, I was going to say there's just two things I think like not people who don't follow a lot of college hockey don't know is that, number one, draft picks are not going to be as effective as like they would in basketball or football. Like your number one overall guys, like they're going to have a lot of skill, but like hockey takes a long time to get really good at, and that's why there's a lot of teams out there that have like
a bunch of
25.
The number one overall pick usually goes straight to the NHL.
Okay, yeah, overall pick, yes. I don't want to, like, if you have Alabama-level talent coming in, you're not necessarily going to Alabama college hockey, because there's a lot of teams out there just have, like, a lot of 25-year-old, 26-year-old guys who've just progressed to, like, their ceilings. The other thing is early hockey rankings are just last year's rankings. Like, I wouldn't pay attention to any rankings right now.
All right, so got to get a word in about Jet Howard. What do you guys think about the pickup of Jet Howard for the Michigan basketball team, real quick?
Well, you know, it's just really, really good that he can go into such a tough place and get a guy out of IMG. Like, that just doesn't happen very often. You know, I just, you know, you talk about recruiting prowess, and I think this really demonstrates that Juwan Howard is an elite recruiter.
I mean, especially in basketball recruiting, you know, late, like the family starts asking for things, and like, you know, to be able to pull this out against some SEC teams.
She got a bag. The recruiting mom admitted publicly she got a bag. I mean, it was Michigan in trouble, guys.
Like, he's got Jace, like, you know, talking to me, like, look, my client is not going anywhere unless he doesn't have to clean his room all year.
But so. more seriously, you know, a 6'7" wing who can actually get to the bucket. You know, I think Franz might be a fairly good comparable, where he's going to be a bit of a playmaker. He's going to be a diverse all around wing. He doesn't have Franz's size, because nobody does, but you know, a guy who I think is going to be a 3-level scorer and a guy who can drive some play as a secondary playmaker.
Yeah, the word I've heard is versatile, and from the tape I've seen, I think that's right. He's a very versatile guy. He can do a lot of things. He shoots the three fine. He can handle the ball. The one issue I've got with him, left hand. I mean, left hand, and what he needs to work on is left hand, and left hand some more.
That's also like Franz.
Yeah.
Right. So, but yeah, he's obviously a nice pickup for Michigan, although not much of a surprise.
Right. All right, folks, that is going to do it for us this week. Another great MGo Blog Roundtable in the books. We'll be back next week. We'll focus on this week of college football, this week's Big Ten games, getting into basketball. Of course, we got Media Day coming up, so a lot to touch on. The next time we're here, Ira and I will be back tomorrow.
Hunter doesn't make the NBA, he's going to make the WWE as a heel. And every heel has a manager. I'll walk with Hunter as his manager, because, man, is he setting himself up to be the heel.